is Peter Fisher, and this is episode 2 of sequence 2 of the Fisher Files, and tonight's title is Screwed. Tonight we're going to talk about getting screwed and what to do about it. Before we get to that, I just wanted to respond to a listener question, which is why I was doing this. And it was kind of a multiple choice. I don't remember all of them. But it was something like A, because it's fun. B, because you like hearing yourself talk. C, because you think it helps people. Etc., etc. To be honest, I don't really know why I do this. It is kind of a pain sometimes, because I do feel like, since I committed to doing 12 more of these, that I have to do them, and I have to get them out on time, and I said they'd post Monday night, and it's Sunday night, and it takes me about an hour to edit them, and so right now it's feeling kind of like a job, but that's okay. I think it helps me to talk about things like this sometimes and sit down and organize my thoughts. And enough people have said, you know, enough things that I feel like it is kind of worth continuing. So I guess that's why I do it. I also just think it's kind of cool, this going out through iTunes. And a lot of people now at this point have sent things, and I'm really going to try to address all of them. So if you sent me a comment or suggestion, rest assured that, you know, sometime in the next 12 episodes, it will get addressed or answered. One thing I was actually doing is thinking of doing is having a conversation with somebody via Skype, and just recording it right off the Mac and using that as a podcast. So if anyone's really keen to do that, drop me a line. Okay, so tonight's title is Getting Screwed, and what I want to talk about is, you know, workplace relationships and how to handle them. I don't have any great insight, but I do just want to remind everyone of some common sense things. And I don't know, it's probably no better in academics than anywhere else, but there are times you're going to feel like people are taking advantage of you, and it is worth thinking through what to do about it, although doing that too much can lead to rather cynical thinking, which I'll also discuss. So, what is getting screwed? Getting screwed is when you feel like someone has really taken advantage of you. A classic example happened about, at this point, 13 years ago to me, which was, I was working at CERN on an experiment called L3, which was a really large collaboration. And we had a weekly analysis working group meeting, which was just the, you know, 10 or 15 people working in one particular area. And that kind of fed into a weekly larger analysis meeting, where each of the groups kind of reported. So in the weekly meeting, I had some idea, and I don't remember whether I gave a presentation on it or not, but just kind of said what I was doing and why I thought it was interesting. And 2 days later, this guy who was in the meeting, who had asked a bunch of questions in the big analysis meeting, stood up and reported that he had been working on this and that this was his idea. And, just basically stole my work. And I remember being really angry about it and kind of not knowing what to do. The guy was from another institution in Europe, and I don't think he was really, it didn't really matter whether he was senior to me or not. I don't really remember whether he was, but it was a big institution, and you know, there was kind of a cohort of people there, and I was trying to think about whether or not to make an issue out of it. And, well, I don't think I ever really did anything except, you know, get drunk and complain to my friends, which is a solution. But I never really addressed the issue, and I stewed about it for a good long while. And, yeah, that's bad. You know, just as a footnote, you know, I think eventually this guy kind of left physics because it turned out he did that kind of thing a lot. And eventually people just get tired of it and don't stop overlooking it. It's kind of interesting because people do overlook that kind of behavior a lot because really, institutionally, it's just hard to deal with. But if you do it too much, then let's just say the letters of recommendation aren't quite what they should be, and suddenly you find that you're not in a very good position. I don't think I handled that pretty well, but that's kind of an example of sort of an extreme case. So let's just say somebody's done something that you feel is hurtful or demeaning. Now, if it's something simply like an insult, you know, just a nasty remark, I feel it's important if you're upset about it to, in some kind way, bring it up with the person. I think it's very important to take the initiative about maintaining your self-esteem. Now, you know, that sounds very, you know, kind of 1980s, but if you take insults lying down, particularly in public, people get a certain impression. And that's not to say that you know, immediately challenge the guy to a fight and beat him up or do something nasty to him or her in return. But I'm thinking along the lines of going privately to that person and saying, look, I really don't appreciate what you said, and I really don't think it'd be a good idea for you to say it again. Maybe even not that harsh, but stick up for yourself. If somebody insults you or treats you badly, just don't let them just walk away. Again, I'm not advocating a physical or you know, challenging response, but just tell them that you're not going to stand for it. The times I've done that, it's made a difference. The times I haven't, generally it's led to problems. And there are a few key times I haven't, and I remember every single one of them now. And remember, a big part of these podcasts is kind of getting things out of your mind. And things isn't like that in your mind. You don't need. So those are kind of the easy things. Just, you know, an insult or a slight. Just, you know, address it and move on. There are the circumstances where you really feel like somebody has taken advantage of you. My example is particularly stark. There are other examples which are less stark. You may feel that the person has taken advantage of you, but you may not have the whole story. You may feel that the person has taken advantage of you, and it may simply be a matter of your perspective. These are more complicated, and the worst thing about them is that, in a sense, you're conflicted in that nobody wants to go and, or not nobody, many people don't want to go and make an issue out of these things because it takes time and energy and it's public and there's risk. On the other hand, you feel like you've been screwed. And I think it's the thing that makes you stew about it is exactly that conflict. And I think, again, it's important that you do something, if for no other reason than to get it out of your mind. Things that fester like that, and boy, have I had them, can really be debilitating. And they can lead to, you know, really lousy weekends when you're sitting kind of churning over something and not really being present with your loved ones. They can lead to, you know, really irrational responses on your part and in general nuttiness, all stuff you just don't need. So if it's clear that someone's taken advantage of you, in the professional sense, say they have stolen your work and it's just obvious, there are a number of things you can do. One is, you know, simply to talk to them. And I always find that whenever I'm really upset or stewing with someone, taking the time to sit down with them and try to talk about it, 95% of the time just solves the problem right then and there. It's maybe different perspectives. It's maybe you didn't understand something, you know. Very frequently, you can just make the whole thing go away in a half-hour conversation. And it's important to not go into this with guns blazing, not walk into the person's office and say, you know, you stole my work, blah, blah, blah. Generally, what I find works best is to choose some neutral place. You know, going for a coffee is good. And going there and really more just ask the question. I mean, if you can get them talking about it without them knowing that you're getting them to talk about it, that's the most valuable way to approach this, because then you're really hearing what they have to say, not what they think you want to say, if you understand what I mean. So if, for example, if you've heard that someone's been bad-mouthing you to, you know, a third party, supervisor, say, rather than go, well, sit down and say, well, what did you say about me? Approach it much more about, how do you think the project is going? If you're, say you're collaborating on a project, how do you think things are working? Get them talking and try to find out what they actually said. Try to keep it from degenerating into just conflict. It, you know, once that happens, people really dig in, and then communication stops. My dad was a lawyer, and one thing I just saw him time and again, and this is why I think he was a pretty good lawyer, is, you know, you get people talking, and as long as people are talking, things are going to happen. It's when people stop talking when, you know, you can really run into trouble. So thing number one to do is, you know, go talk to someone. If you feel an idea or something of yours has been stolen, somebody has taken your intellectual property, if it's not already written down and put someplace with a date, do it immediately. Just write up what you have and email it to yourself, or put it on a computer with that timestamps things, and, you know, collect email, that the relevant email, because all of that's timestamped and can establish precedence, and disseminate it. If it's inside of a collaboration, you know, just let people know that this is your work and it's not being accurately represented. You might want to talk to your supervisor or, you know, some senior person. Senior people have a lot of perspective on these things because most of us have been through it. And tend to kind of take the long view. Sometimes it's you know, really something, you know, the stealing of someone's idea is really something that's relatively innocuous. Might not feel that way, but you know, get someone else's perspective on it. And then really decide how far you want to pursue it. Now, there have been cases. There was one notable one a few years ago when somebody was, somebody took software and used it without citing the people who actually wrote it. And it caused quite a stir at the institution where this happened, and there was an investigation, and I think eventually everything worked out. But if you're the wounded party, you should really think about how far you want to pursue it. If nothing else, then for yourself, just you know, decide what level you want to take it to. On the other hand, one thing you should always keep in mind, particularly working in big collaborations, is that you can inadvertently do the same thing to someone else. They can give you a piece of code, maybe that does something very clever, and you go ahead and use it, and you get some nice result, and in the process of explaining the result, you forget to mention them. And that happens not infrequently. Now, some collaborations have built-in mechanisms for handling this, but regardless, you should always be careful about, you know, particularly in the little meetings, you know, acknowledging the person that did the work. Very frequently, that's just enough. Now, this has never happened to me, but I've heard it's happened to some people. Sometimes, your people's work actually gets published by other people without being properly cited. And this is really very difficult because in you know, most fields, your publication record is really your scientific cred. Less so in high energy physics, interestingly, because the collaborations are so large that, you know, when you have a paper with 500 or 1,000 names on it, and you know, no one's going to really know who did the work. But in most fields, the collaborations are fairly small, and having someone write up what you've done, whether they stole it or not, and publish it can be quite painful, particularly early on when you know those first few publications are important for you really establishing a sense of yourself. If you really feel that someone has is misrepresenting an idea of yours as their own, it's important that you contact the editor and publish a comment about it, or ask that a comment be published. Here it's very important to seek the guidance of a senior person, because if you these are very formal things, and if you really feel that you've been wronged, then it's important that you follow a careful procedure. Now, underlying all of this is, and this goes back to organization, is really having a place that you've recorded your ideas and your thoughts, you know, a notebook with dated pages or computer files that have time, date, stamps, but some place where you can turn to really indicate when you were thinking about something and when you actually worked things out and how you were progressing. And, you know, if you can, you know, reconstruct when you communicated this to another person. It's always tricky in science, because the best part of it is the free flow of information, and there's nothing more obnoxious than the guy who doesn't tell you anything because you think you're going to steal his great idea. You know, most ideas aren't that great and aren't really worth stealing, and most of us just wouldn't bother anyway. But in terms of insulating yourself against those who do, it's a good idea to keep careful notes. So probably enough on just idea stealing. There are those people that you really can't get along with. And for those cases, it's really important that you figure some way out, up to and including just leaving. You can't allow a bad relationship at work to degrade things. It really just takes one bad person to really kind of wreck, a group, or I've even seen departments wrecked by one bad person. Now, one thing is, kind of, is it me or is it him? Or is it me or is it her? Is this person really behaving reasonably? And I just have something against them, because I don't like the color of their hair or something? Or are they really behaving badly? It really comes down to just common sense. A lot of times, if you look at someone's behavior and you're really finding it unacceptable, and you can explain to yourself why, then it probably is unacceptable. And so you've talked to them about it a couple of times, and there's just been no action. If it gets to that point where someone is continuing just to be a problem, you really just have to get away from them in a lot of instances. There's this whole idea that you have to be able to get along with anyone, and I actually don't think that's true. There are people who just can't work together and who just shouldn't work together, and you just have to work out how you're going to change things so that you're not in daily contact or as little contact as possible with a person. Now, I'm not saying that the first time someone crosses you or says something you don't like that you just write them off. I'm saying if it's going on a year and you're just finding that you dread coming to work, or you dread group meetings or the weekly phone call just because there's this person there, that's when you're really going to have to start thinking of getting away. So the important thing to keep in mind is that usually if you find yourself brooding about somebody and you've been doing it a lot, then there really is a problem, and you should think about doing something about it. Very seldom in my experience have I ever really been, found myself wrong about an intuition I felt with somebody after, working with them for a long period of time. So this isn't really so much about somebody who's screwing you, but more about somebody who, is just making your life very, very difficult. I've had this happen to me 3 times, and every one of them was just miserable, and, one of them went on for a long time and was really something I should have taken action of and didn't. So that's just some ideas I have about how to handle a situation where you feel you've been wronged. Trust your instincts, and it's a good time to seek advice of an older person who you trust. Now, there are going to be those situations where you want to retaliate, and in general, I counsel against that. Satisfying though it is, it usually doesn't achieve its end. It usually doesn't make things better. However, if you really just feel that you have to retaliate, a really interesting thing to do, particularly during the summer, is if the person has an office or a desk or something, get a fish. And depending on if it's a large office, you might want a larger fish, a bluefish or something, a smaller desk maybe, a herring, wrap it tightly in foil and hide it really, really well. And what happens is, as the fish begins to rot, there's just kind of this lingering odor that really kind of never gets bad enough to do anything about, but is obnoxious. And especially if you get the right kind of fish, it smells vaguely human. So again, I don't recommend this, but if you really feel like you have to do something, that's a pretty good thing to do. This week's Mind Feed, there are a couple of pretty interesting things that came from science. A couple of weeks ago, I'm a little bit behind on my reading. One of them is about supersolids, and the most interesting thing is missing moment of inertia. The idea is that in some superconducting solid objects or supersolids, where, for example, helium-4 at very high pressure has a solid phase. If you rotate it, in fact, all of the atoms don't rotate. Some of them remain fixed in the lab frame, and so when you measure the moment of inertia, you actually measure a smaller moment of inertia than if you just calculated what the moment of inertia should be based on the position of all of the atoms. And this is because, like in a superfluid, there are actually two phases. There's the normal solid phase, and there's a supersolid phase. And the supersolid phase is described by one wave function. And therefore, if you don't give it enough angular momentum to create a vortex, then it can't rotate. And this is a physics perspectives article that shows that the fraction of supersolid is related to the surface to volume ratio. And there's some really nice experimental results that are presented and discussed. It's interesting that at least for me, kind of living in a world of high energy physics and these very complex ideas about cosmology and the universe and very high energy scales, that there are still these very surprising things that happen in condensed matter physics that really kind of challenge your picture of what is solid. The other thing is a cosmology article, and it's about some work that was done by a postdoc and a couple of graduate students, and on the CMB map. What they've done is compared the CMB map from WMAP, the Wilkinson microwave anisotropy probe. They've compared that with a catalog of 1.8 million galaxies produced at the Very Large Array. And by looking at the shapes of the distortions in the microwave background, they are able to see weak lensing. So this is distortions in the shape caused by when the microwave background photons passed near these large galaxies and were distorted. And so this tells something about first of all, how weak lensing works, and what the dark matter distribution was before galaxies formed, because the time of decoupling of these photons was before the time of galactic formation. So if you can untangle the lensing from the the galaxies that are around now, you would be able to see lensing from much earlier in the galaxy. So they didn't in the universe. They didn't actually present that, but what they did show was that you could see the lensing of the foreground galaxies. And what's really nice is that this work was done by pretty junior people, and they were able to do it because the WMAP data is just freely available. You can just download the whole map, and it's no big deal. So it's really a success of NASA's open data policy. This is posting a little bit late, but it's been a busy week. I'm not having much of a summer, which is too bad. But thanks to all of you who wrote in. And if you'd like me to mention your name and when you write in and I use things that you've sent, please say so. The default is not to, because you can just keep things a little bit confidential. Thanks to Sheila and John Marston and Sean Thompson and Maynard Galinas from the LNS Computational Facility, and Bonna Newman and Homer Reed, and all of you who wrote in, particularly Terry and Georgios. Thanks for the comments, and I'll talk to you next week. And until then, have a good summer.